Folks, you're listening to the John DePietro Show. Joining us right now, he is a columnist with the Boston Globe, mainly focuses on Rhode Island. It is Dan McGowan. And Dan, right out of the box, Coach McKee needs a new game plan. You know, I always like to hear, what was the reaction you got from that column? I thought it was right on the money. There's so many different parts of this that really kind of sum up. But let's just start off with reaction you got on the column.
You know, it's funny, I said this to you a couple of times when I've been somewhat critical of the governor. I think at this point, the governor, you know, I fall into that class of people the governor just writes off completely. So I don't hear as much from the governor's people. They've never been the type to really argue balls and strikes over things. They sort of write you off. I will say more people than expected seem to still defend Director Alvin, Peter Alvin. There's still, I think, a segment on, you know, people at the State House who feel like he's pretty responsive. There are plenty of people who are, you know, who are calling for his head, of course. But more defense of Peter Alvin than of the governor. I think at this point, you know, both the governor has no interest in defending himself to me, and I think it actually also speaks to the level of frustration that I think a lot of certainly my readers, probably your listeners, have with this entire situation. I don't, no matter where you are on the political spectrum, left, right, middle, people are really frustrated with the response. Particularly I think the governor talking last week about, you know, kind of being very dismissive of the wait times on the highway. I think that really, really kind of went up people's backside, and I think he's starting to see that a little bit.
Dan McGowan, were you surprised to learn that on Monday night, December 11th, after Peter Alvini went alone on live television, that Governor McKee apparently, according to the documents just came out, he then went to a Hope High School basketball practice?
I think it was my former colleague Ted Nisi at Channel 12 that reported that initially a while ago. I think it's outrageous, right? The idea that the governor couldn't cancel, you know, going to a basketball practice, on what was particularly that night, as much of an emergency as you could have in this state. I can't fathom the decision making that goes into that. You know, he took a little bit of a beating for, being at the pizza shop earlier in the day, and you know the excuse there is, well, you know he didn't even tell him yet. I mean, the governor of the state of Rhode Island didn't know that the bridge was going to be shut down, and then, you know, until maybe an hour before they announced it, 2 hours before they announced it, and then didn't see the importance of needing to be at a press conference with Director Alvini, and instead went to a basketball practice. I mean, again, I know he wants to be a coach, but for God's sakes, I think I just can't fathom that decision-making by our governor.
Is that just, Dan McGowan, you've covered him now for a couple of years, and I can't get it straight. Do you think, is that the people around him, or is that just his instincts that after, and apparently he left the State House around 5:20, so he watched, I would imagine, the beginning of Peter Alvini alone, live on television, and then at 5:20 leaves and goes to the practice. Are there people around him saying, I don't think this is a good idea? Or is this, like, is it a combination?
It's a great question. Here's my perception of it. I can't say for sure, but, you know, through reporting and through talking to people, I think the governor surrounds himself with people who do not question him. Okay. I think he demands loyalty. Or implies that he expects loyalty, because he cuts off anybody who doesn't like him, right? You've seen the way he's handled his political opponents. You see the way he treats the press. And I think a lot of people in that office just don't speak up. There's nobody in that office there's nobody dumb enough in that office to not, you know, sit there and say, boy, Governor, do you think you reschedule this this practice. But the question is, does anyone have the willingness to speak up and say it? And then the other part, of course, is would he have listened anyway? I don't know the answer to either of those questions, and I think that's a challenge that this governor has. It's a very small circle. I'm not sure he gets a lot of honest feedback from people, because I don't think he likes negative feedback.
Dan McGowan, in your column, you mentioned one of his best allies, and it's accurate, is the East Providence Mayor, Bob De Silva. Now, I believe he's almost lone wolf now, as far as East Bay sticking by the governor. I think that was interesting, his comments to you. And for now, as you put, he's sticking with McKee.
Yeah, you know, the thing is whenever I'm going to criticize a politician when I'm writing something, you know, I really do try to at least make an effort of let me see another side of this. Let me understand what somebody else might say. So I went to the person who's the most supportive of him, right? And there's no question, I think, that Mayor De Silva is somebody who, he helped deliver East Providence to Governor McKee in the election, and has always been, has been a big supporter. Governor even announced his campaign, if you remember, in East Providence. And, you know, his view on this, I think, in part is they're answering every question that I have, right? He actually just said, I didn't put this in the column, but I thought it was interesting perspective, which was, he kind of said, I view this as two separate problems. One is the East Providence problem, the East Providence, traffic problem. And the other is the bridge problem. And he said, look, as the, mayor of this place, my job is to care about East Providence, my place, and I'm getting my questions answered. When I need, when I needed the extra police officers, they said they would pay the extra money. When I need, he used the example of, do not block the blocks kind of painted so that, you can kind of have an easier traffic flow. The DOT is coming through and doing that. And so his view on this is, they're answering my questions. I don't know, like you're hearing from almost every politician. Well, I think the quote of the year is, I'm not an engineer, right? Everybody says, I'm not an engineer. I don't know. I can't tell you the ins and outs of this. He says the same thing, and he says, if and when people need to be held accountable, he believes they will. That's why he's sticking with the governor. But you hit it on the head before you asked the question. The one, because very much, I think, around East Providence and around, sort of anyone on the East Bay at this point, I think, is really fed up with the response to this bridge closure.
The Lodge Pub and Eatery, 40 Breakneck Hill Road in Lincoln. Lunch, dinner, drinks in the lounge, especially this time of year. So much going on. They always have a nice crowd right there. Full bar, large dining area right there in the lounge. Easy to get to, whether it's lunch or dinner. A great meal is waiting for you at the Lodge Pub and Eatery. Think of this, since 1994, that's right, celebrating the big anniversary this year. I'll see you at the Lodge Pub and Eatery, 40 Breakneck Hill Road in Lincoln. Folks, again, we're speaking with Dan McGowan of the Boston Globe. His great column, Coach McKee, we need a new game plan. Just two more questions about that, Dan McGowan. One, what is your take on the governor sending Joe Allman over to DOT?
Well, Joe Allman's a grown-up, right? He was a good, very much considered a very good town administrator in Lincoln. He has a law enforcement background, although, again, I wouldn't read too far into the law enforcement thing. I think it's mostly he's sort of one of the people in that administration that they really trust, right? There's kind of these aren't names that people are going to be totally familiar with, but the governor's chief of staff is Tony Afonso, has been around for a long time in government and in other, areas around government. He's kind of the guy who makes almost every decision, with the governor. And Joe Allman's kind of the number two. He's sort of the other guy that is older, experienced, again, had a long career as the Lincoln Town Administrator and in law enforcement. And so I think this is a little bit of a way to say, hey, we needed to do something here. We, by the way, they waited until after the the announcement that the Department of Justice and DOT's inspector generals are coming in and asking for questions. I think they knew they had to do something, and it makes some level of sense. Again, he's an almond, he's a trusted guy. I would imagine, I know, and like I was listening to an interview with Peter Elvedi, and he said, we welcome this, and Joel is going to help with some of the, cross-agency communication and things like that. Nobody likes to have someone come in and, as an overseer. Good for Director Elvedi to maybe play the, to keep his head up here. But make no mistake about it, this was meant to send a message, I think, both to DOT and I think to residents of the state. I think Governor McKee knows he has been, a little bit lackadaisical in his response to this. And this is one way to say to people, hey, we are sending somebody else. And by the way, it worked. If you think about it, he got coverage from every TV station and every newspaper, saying, look, they're making a move. They're bringing in the director or bringing in the deputy chief of staff. And so, I think it probably at least initially kind of works because it shows that the governor is trying to do something.
Dan McGowan, you mentioned Peter Elvedi. Obviously, he's on the hot seat, but my question for you is, based on his background, he comes from the laborers, with Senate President Dominic Ruggiero, and never mind, Gina Raimondo was the one that brought him in for the whole roadworks. Could Governor McKee could he even get rid of Peter if he wanted to?
It's a million-dollar question. I think it would be hard. I think it would be hard. Look, Gina Raimondo, I think it would have been hard for Gina Raimondo to get rid of Peter Elvedi. He's the guy who is, well-connected and has the, is really well-supported with the laborers, and laborers are incredibly important politically. So I think it would be really hard. The only thing here is, if it's on the governor, I have to weigh how much, by the way, I can, pin this on previous administrations. Can I say this goes back to Gina? The problem is the link, right, is Director Elvedi. He made the decision to keep the director. I think Governor McKee is going to have to kind of weigh, how much he's willing to kind of stick with Director Elvedi. I pointed this out in my column. It is not uncommon for a governor to, to throw even some of their top supporters in some ways under the bus when a big scandal happens. I, Elizabeth Roberts, of course, for Gina Raimondo, big supporter of Gina Raimondo. She was the EOHHS director that after the UHIP crisis, she was very much pushed out. I'll go back even further. You remember Keith Stokes getting pushed out as the economic development director under Governor Chafee after 38 Studios. So, there is precedent to the governor is never going to step down. Right? It's just like whenever there's a scandal at the federal level, whether the president doesn't step down, it's the secretary of, agriculture, it's whatever else. And that's the same kind of situation here. But Director Elvedi is unique. He's popular among the laborers. He's very popular with, of course, Senate President Ruggiero. As I told you before, a lot of phone calls that I'm getting are still mildly supportive of the director because he's very responsive and he's a nice guy and that kind of thing.
I know Peter very well, and I've even shared with him, Dan McGowan, just quickly, that I think his decision, it was 8 years ago, to do this weekly segment with Gene, that gave him good media skill training. He's actually very comfortable in front of a microphone. He was comfortable out in front of television. Propane Plus. Call them today. Heating and cooling in Rhode Island, 401-885-4209. In Massachusetts, 508-252-3359 for Propane Plus. Three generations you can always depend on Propane Plus for all your heating and cooling. Call them today, 401-885-4209. 4209. Three generations, they're available 24/7 for service and delivery, and they're going to serve you for a very long time. They have a great user-friendly website. You just log on at propaneplus.com, and then you type in your zip code, residential, commercial, Propane Plus, heating and cooling, always there for you. Give them a call today. In Rhode Island, 401-885-4209. In Massachusetts, 508-252-3359. The Johnson family, three generations, heating and cooling. You can always depend on Propane Plus. I'm just curious, folks, again, it's Dan McGowan of the Boston Globe. In the Boston Globe, internal emails shed light on Rhode Island's response to the critical failure. Steph Machado, Brian Amaral. I'm just curious, Dan McGowan, what stood out to you in that story?
Well, you know what stood out? The lack of information.
Yeah.
I was really surprised. And look, I've been there. I'm on the team at the Globe, but I watched all of the coverage that every news outlet, you know, went through. And you know, I've been there for really juicy email dumps. Use the 38 Studios as a great example. I've been there for really boring email dumps, too. And you kind of get excited because there's so many emails and you get to write do a story. And I think Tim White at Channel 12, you know, they had him walking into the DOT to pay his check for his, you know, his public records request and that sort of thing. I was stunned by how little we learned about this. No emails from Director Alviti, no emails from his chief of staff, John Igliozzi. You know, there was a handful of kind of conversation about, hey, this looks like a critical finding. And let's revisit it again on Monday. It comes across as somewhat, word I used before, lackadaisical. Now, it's possible a lot more work was happening. It's possible maybe all the reporters in the market didn't ask for the right emails. I don't know. But it was surprising to me how little we learned, given the fact that, you know, again, on Monday afternoon, they had to call a press conference to shut down the most, you know, the second busiest bridge in the entire state. It was very surprising that there wasn't a flurry of activity and, you know, and almost panic about this. Because again, in the past, you know, 38 Studios, great example, you know, there was so many emails and so much information that came out just via public records request and just via like seeing emails and text messages. And this time, I didn't think there was very much there.
Folks, also, you'll find out from Roadmap. I'm going to tell you in just a moment how you can get it. How Dan McGowan broke the news. Governor McKee, 45% approval rating. By the way, I believe that was done before the bridge thing really came in, Dan McGowan. So there's that. And then there's other stories in the Boston Globe. The Newton teacher strike is, I can't believe what is going on in Newton. And it's, who knows how long this is going to go on or where this is going to play out.
Yeah, and John, by the way, I believe they're now on 10 days of striking in a school district that pays teachers infinitely more than almost any teacher makes here in Rhode Island.
Yep.
But I'm sure where you're going with this to some degree is, while Rhode Island is a little bit stricter about strikes with teachers, it's very hard to strike. In fact, it's illegal. Technically, it's illegal in Massachusetts as well. If the teachers who are at the top of the pile, who teach the smartest kids and the wealthiest kids in Newton, Massachusetts, are striking, just imagine the conversations we're going to have in the next couple of years in Rhode Island about, you know, teachers' rights and what they deserve. And so make no mistake about it, it's not just test scores that we look at when we look at Massachusetts. It's what are they getting paid? What are the teachers fighting for? And 10 days of a strike in the middle of the school year is stunning. I mean, that's longer in some cases, I think, than Chicago, which is, like, notorious for striking, than Chicago has had.
And Boston Globe editorial saying end the strike, and one of the columnists for the Boston Globe comparing it to Reagan saying that they should fire the teachers. And there's also, folks, and Dan McGowan, this is another story to watch. Migrants move from Logan to Roxbury Recreational Complex. The governor's in a tough spot, but you don't make anybody happy by doing something like that.
Very much so, John. You're exactly right. And this is, you know, another thing to watch for Rhode Island, because It's just only natural. I mean, the borders are not that far apart, right?
Yep.
So we're close state-wise, and so it's something to be paying attention to. Right now, you know, we ask about this a lot. I know you do, too. We have not, in Rhode Island, seen a significant surge of migrants. But, again, if they're coming through Massachusetts, it only makes sense in some cases to also end up in Rhode Island, especially as you start to find out that Rhode Island is a little bit more affordable than Massachusetts or New York.
One final question before we tell everyone how they can get Roadmap. What is your thought on Helena Folks, Dan McGowan? She's not that far behind Governor McKee in fundraising for 2026.
No, raised $116 or $1,000 without really blinking an eye. Look, Helena Folks is going to be campaigning for the next 3 years, right? She's absolutely running for governor, and I think she's going to be pretty formidable. I think she looks at what's going on. I think she's looking at this DOT crisis and the Washington Bridge crisis, and really thinks it's it's a bit of an opening. I think what you're not going to see, I think you're going to see her do a lot of fundraising and very little public commenting, because she doesn't want to be the person who's just critical all the time. But again, starting this early with fundraising means you're going to have a bunch of years to really ramp up that war chest. And then you'll hit the ground running, I think, let's say 8 months from now, to really, really roll out a campaign that will be a better campaign this time than it was last time, right? She had those early hiccups and the learning curve of how to be a candidate. She's not going to have those problems again this time. And I think she'll be a very formidable candidate.
Folks, you hear me mention Roadmap. It arrives right in your inbox. I read it every single morning. It has all links to things, tell you how much Greg's chocolate you can buy with all the fundraising they have. And Dan McGowan, right now, if you'd be so kind to extend that offer to anyone who's listening.
Yeah, very simple. Send me a blank email, rinews@globe.com. rinews@globe.com. I'll sign you up. It's free. You'll start getting it first thing tomorrow morning.
Dan McGowan, great job. We'll see you out there.
Thanks so much, Sean. See ya.
You need a good plumber? I found the best plumber, JMB Plumbing. Call them today. All your plumbing needs, 401-743-9153. JMB Plumbing. They've been providing plumbing services for years. Skilled professionals stand behind their work. Guarantee you will be happy. Maybe it's repairing damaged water pipes, repair clogged pipelines, maybe replace a water heater, as well as all your plumbing needs. Call them now. It's JMB Plumbing, 401-743-9153. Nothing throws off your life or your home or your business. When you need plumbing service, you need someone reliable, someone who's professional, someone who'll handle the job and do it right. It's JMB Plumbing. Call them today. 401-743-9153, JMB Plumbing, and look for them on Facebook. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. Huge developments in the Karen Reed case. Someone that's been covering it, I think is interesting, Grant Smith Ellis, and he gave a breakdown on what he thinks the latest now regarding Karen Reed and the blogger Turtle Boy, Aidan Kearney. I want to play some of this. Here it is.
Do you
right
think
there.
That they have enough?
Well, before I get to that question, I just want to back up and quickly take on this preemptive weaponization of the Overton window that we see being deployed by not only the Karen Reed PR team, but also some of the moronic mob of minions. Not everyone this Free Karen Reed supporters falls in that group. But for the people engaging in that, I think they may not be doing it intentionally, but Kate, I'm sure you've picked up on this. It's not a good faith effort to engage in discourse. It's an attempt to get ahead of the range of acceptable discourse about a topic in the public sphere, and it's an attempt to force you to respond because that defines the parameters of the Overton window. The problem is it's this very degraded form of it, and you're rightfully calling it out because they're undermining what is a very substantial and consequential overlapping nexus between a corrupted federal probe that went nowhere and a alleged murderer who they've been tricked into defending. Now, getting back to your question about what do I think is going to happen going forward, I think it's a 9-part analysis. I laid it out on Twitter earlier. If you want to read it, you can see it. But basically, thus, I think the most likely outcome is Karen Reed takes a plea to manslaughter for the death of Officer John O'Keefe, who, of course, his memory is center to all of this, because justice, whether it comes to the people who intimidated witnesses or comes from Ms. Reed, is centered around everything that flowed from Officer O'Keefe being murdered. So I think my opinion is Reed takes a plea to manslaughter. Reed, as part of that plea, has to allocute publicly and say in front of open court something like, this is what happened and how it happened and how I did it. She probably also has to allocute to some other stuff that may not happen right away, because I think Reed will, in my opinion, also become a state's witness in the trial of Turtle Boy. I don't think Turtle Boy will get the opportunity to plea. I think he'll be kept in jail for a few more months. He's not getting out anytime soon. And then I think he'll face a criminal trial on, right now it's 18 plus felony counts. I think we'll see it get expanded, to answer your question, based on the ongoing grand jury, which was, of course, confirmed during the restraining order hearing and by both Kearney and the victim in that case, the ongoing grand jury. If the indictments come up from that and Kearney's facing 25, 30, 40, whatever it is, indictments, and Reed's already turned state's witness and it's just him, the length of jail time he could be facing is exponential. But Reed then would, in my opinion, enter into something called the continuing cooperation agreement, where her ability to avoid serious punishment for her plea in the O'Keefe case will be tied to her ability to furnish information that results in the successful prosecution of Kearney. This is a very common thing. It's called the continuing cooperation agreement. Then, as a result of those things happening, I think we will see other people brought into the state grand jury, and way more than the Canton Nine and some of these, that 10th person who faced a criminal charge. I think we will see far more criminal charges related to the apparatus surrounding Turtle Boy and Reed and the PR network here. And I think what will happen is those people may get plea deals or whatnot, but they're coming into that criminal case. And the reality is, and I've said this time and time and time again, the media attention is going to go away. The public focus is going to go away. What's going to stick is the people who catch charges and the criminal process that flows from that. Whether you take a plea deal or not, it is not going to be a pleasant road. And I think it is some wonderful, sorry, my voice is running out. I think it's some wonderful.
Let me just leave it at that. Folks, this, I don't know. This thing became a runaway train, excuse me, I believe. And the two of them are in seemingly an awful lot of trouble about these search warrants and what's coming out on Karen Reed's phone, because Ted Daniel of Boston 25, he also had a good piece, because it, again, I know everything needs context, but it certainly would come off as though she was encouraging Turtle Boy to harass the witnesses in the case and then providing him with various information and addresses and things like that, even having the go-ahead of what he was publishing. I mean, there was a time that I've even said I thought that maybe her attorneys were the ones that were helping him. But now it sounds like it was
Boston police officer boyfriend.
It was actually Karen Reed. Now listen to this.
The state police used to seize two phones from Karen Reed. Our investigative reporter Ted Daniel first broke this story on Twitter this afternoon. And Ted, it is possible that Reed could face some new charges.
Vanessa, according to the warrant, yes, this is part of the witness intimidation investigation separate from her murder case. State police claim Karen Reed has been working with Aiden Carney, the blogger known as Turtle Boy, to prevent her murder case from going to trial. Carney was indicted on witness intimidation charges in December. State police put Aiden Carney behind bars before his trial, and now it appears they want Karen Reed next. This search warrant claims Reed has indirectly intimidated and harassed people identified as witnesses in her murder case. It says Reed and Carney exchanged 189 phone calls and communicated on Signal, an encrypted messaging service. State police allege Reed took steps to provide Carney non-public information while appearing to be distant and controlling what he can publish publicly.
This is the home of Brian Albert.
Carney runs the blog TV Daily News. He says Reed's been framed and has been aggressively advocating on her behalf. A college friend of Karen Reed's connected Carney to Reed last spring when he first began covering her case. That college friend has since fallen out with Reed and is now working with state police. The warrant alleges Reed directly and indirectly gave Carney photography, material relative to her criminal defense, and editorial oversight of blog posts and videos intended to harass. And according to the warrant, Reed's college friend tipped Carney off to a federal probe looking at local and state law enforcement's handling of her murder case. In April, she texted him, "Not public. The feds have been involved longer than anyone is likely guessing." Statements from Carney's former girlfriend are also included in the warrant. She told state police Karen Reed was interviewed by federal law enforcement, and she claims Carney told her Reed's attorneys were working with the U.S. Attorney's Office.
So a lot to digest there. Reed's lawyers declined to comment on the warrant. However, her attorney, David Unetti, did tell me he's waiting to learn what the federal investigation has uncovered. Reed's defense and the Norfolk DA's office have formally requested any information the feds may have that it could impact her upcoming trial. For 25 Investigates, I'm Ted Daniel.
You know, very, very... Great reporting by Ted Daniel. It sounds to me like the whole Karen Reed defense is imploding. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. AJ, drywall, plaster, home improvement, call them today for a free quote. You can also find them on Facebook, 401-323-9252. 323-9252, AJ, drywall, plasters, home improvement, frame to finish basements. What a difference it'll make in your basement. Acoustic ceilings. Look how beautiful your ceiling could be. New homes, additions. Also, commercial rehabs, painting, remodeling. Contact them today. It's a family-run business. AJ, drywall, plaster, home improvements. Call for a free quote. What a difference they'll make in your home, your ceilings, floors, basements. 401-323-9252. What a difference. Beautiful walls and ceilings. 401-323-9252. You can also find them on Facebook. It's AJ Drywall, Plaster, and Home Improvements for your home or business. Folks, you're listening to The John DePietro Show. Joining us right now, I have had the pleasure of knowing this individual. I respect him. I admire him. He is the president, Federation for American Immigration Reform. I would argue he has been on the forefront of this issue more than anyone else, and it is our friend Dan Stein. Dan, so great to talk to you, and boy, I'd love to hear your thoughts on where we are right now with this pending House impeachment.
Well, glad to be with you. You know, this is really a major constitutional crisis because, you know, our system of checks and balances generally has every power subject to an audit by another branch of government, right? So, you know, the courts are often superintending what the executive is doing and Congress checks the executive. Well, in the case of Mayorkas and immigration, we have a situation where Mayorkas has decided to essentially take upon himself the power to admit aliens without limit. And whether it's Congress setting limits or courts considering cases or not considering cases, he's been able to operate outside the law. And the impeachment inquiry is part of this thing happening now in Texas, where Texas is saying, under the Constitution, this is a compact, we have the right to control the borders when the federal government refuses to do its job. Well, if you allow Mayorkas to simply ignore the law and let millions of people in and demand schooling, housing, places in hotels and apartments and everything else without limits and without the consent of the governed, then you have a tyranny. And so the impeachment inquiry obviously is going to have trouble getting a conviction in the Senate, no doubt, but it's very important in laying out the record for how this happened and what are the abuses under the law that took place, the corruption and misgovernance that have happened, so that in 2025, God willing, with different political leadership, Congress can step in and craft legislation to make sure this never, ever happens again.
And Dan, if you could just touch on, I mean, you've covered this for a long time. How would you describe how Mayorkas has conducted himself in the office?
Well, this has been something we've been concerned about for a very long time, which is if you have an unscrupulous, corrupt executive that, again, decides to use immigration for his own benefit, for his party's benefit, for whatever ideological benefit or for the benefit of cartels, as a co-conspirator with smuggling operatives and paramilitary cartels, you've got the basis for someone who needed to be removed from office. Now, President Lincoln got rid of General McClellan, right? Joe Biden has not gotten rid of Mayorkas. Mayorkas has been contemptuous to Congress. He lies repeatedly to the American people in Congress. He somehow believes that Congress doesn't have the right to superintend what's happening, to get honest answers. He constantly tells us the border is secure. He has this way of kind of looking down and his nose at you. I guess vision problem. I don't know. But whatever the reason, he looks arrogant. Yes. And he sounds arrogant. And frankly, John, I mean, how on earth can anyone serve as a cabinet secretary in any administration if the hostility from Congress is so vapid, so intense, so vicious that the relationship is non-existent? It's hard to even understand how. I mean, remember that this started under Obama. I mean, at the time, I said this is a dark and dangerous power where Obama is now asserting in his second term, not his first term. He said he didn't have this power. Second term, he said, you know, maybe I can use a pen and a phone. And using this parole power, which is supposed to be a very limited use discretionary thing for a handful of people, urgent reasons, he's turned this thing into a parallel immigration program and committing massive fraud on the American people by admitting people with phony asylum claims, knowing that they'll never get court dates years and years down the line, at the same time demanding Congress, quote, fix the system by basically giving an amnesty and essentially jamming Congress into saying, all you can do is ratify, after the fact, decisions I've made in paroling in millions of people. And then he's been setting up these parallel parole programs from countries without any legal authority at all, extending temporary protected status, which is, again, a limited use provision, to people from Venezuela, and then turning around and saying, but if you come after a certain day, we're going to deport you. Well, obviously, TPS then was a sham, because if you can deport people to Venezuela, then you shouldn't have granted him TPS. So he's been arrogantly abusing, misusing, and breaking the immigration laws, and then lying about it. And then telling all these negotiations in the Senate where Mayorkas is participating, I mean, this guy's the Jack the Ripper of border security, John. Why would you want him in the room?
Folks, again, it's Dan Stein. He is the president, Federation for American Immigration Reform. I'm letting you, the listeners, know. I'm just telling you, I've been covering this for a long time. There's no one more knowledgeable or more entertaining in his presentation than Dan Stein. Dan, while I have you, what is your take on what's going on right now with the governor of Texas, Governor Abbott, and the Biden administration?
Well, this is very interesting because, you know, under Article 4, the states have the power to repel foreign invasion. The cartels are a paramilitary operation with assault weapons and organized like a military. And they are running these massive smuggling operations. They're killing Americans directly or through fentanyl. And, you know, Abbott has petitioned the federal government for some kind of protection, and it hasn't come. So his position, which is very clear, is that the Texas has the right to set up perimeter barriers, buoys, razor wire, and deploy the Texas National Guard in service of the national interest. Well, you know, Biden administration has not only made it easier to immigrate illegally at every turn. I mean, you can't name one thing they've done to help deter it.
No.
They sue anybody who tries to help out, right? They affirmatively try to stop. So, of course, this Biden administration went to court. They got the Supreme Court on an interim level appeal to say, yeah, you can take it, you know, during the case, you can take the razor wire out because it's a federal supremacy argument about the border security. And arguably, it is a federal power. Well, okay, so then the question was, are you going to actually come and take it, right? It's one thing to win the court case, another thing to actually do it in an election year, when in all 50 states, immigration is an outcome-determining political issue in this campaign. And if any, although Biden has more vulnerabilities, frankly, than a Lusitania, I mean, he's politically, on immigration, he's like between the wind and water and getting hit all the time. So the optics of the federal government coming down there and tearing down razor wire don't look so good, right? So Abbott, to his credit, called their bluff, and he basically gave the middle finger to the administration and said, you got to come and take it down. And they blinked. Biden blinked, right? Just like they always blink in the face of hostility. I mean, usually they're blinking over at overseas terrorists and foreign dictators. But this time they're blinking at a governor, and they're saying, well, if you give us access for, you know, humanitarian emergencies, we won't get in the way, right? So you see, in a sense, Abbott... As of today, at least, he's prevailing in his strategy. And you have to give this guy credit. We got some great governors. I know yours is not one of them, but we have great governors.
Yes,
you know, in some of these states, and God bless them. I mean, you know, what are you going to say? He's not running for Congress. He's not running for president.
He's
fantastic. He's doing the right thing.
He is.
Yeah.
For the people of Texas. Hey, Dan, you'll appreciate this. As you probably have seen, they have the illegals. They're sleeping at Logan. And I went up to, you know, get some tape and so forth. And one of the guys at Massport, who I've dealt with in the past, told me that the translator told them that all the women were told, just say you're pregnant. And they were all automatically admitted into the country. So you had women that were there that were in their 60s. They all said they were pregnant. You had... You know, young women, that just becomes, that's another part of where they manipulate the system, that the Biden administration allows that to happen.
Yeah, but this is one thing to be inept. It's another thing to intentionally sabotage the system. And then you see the hockey stick when you look at the numbers. Biden comes in, dismantles everything. But now Biden has the audacity to say to the Senate, oh, if you pass this lousy bill that actually weakens my power, I'll shut the border down now. Okay, Biden threatened to veto H.R. 2, the strong bill that the House passed, the day after they passed it last year. Okay, it wasn't even slated to come up in the Senate, and the White House already issued a veto threat. So he turns around, and now he's going, well, it's the Republicans' fault I haven't secured the border. I mean, I understand that politicians lie. I mean, I get that. But this is felony level, Super Bowl, World Series level line by the most disingenuous. I mean, this is insane. I mean, how can he sit there and blame the Republicans for something when he's sitting there with a knife, blood dripping off the... I mean, he basically, you can track every single act that he did from the day he came into office, every executive order, every policy change, every regulation to demonstrate how he created this mass invasion. And to turn around and try to blame it on the Republicans is mind-blowing.
Yeah. Folks, again, by the way, I want to let people know, if you visit their website, I love the clock of the daily border crossings that Fair has up. The website is fairus.org. Again, he is the president, Federation American Immigration Reform, the best, and it is Dan Stein. Dan, great to talk to you. I will talk to you again very soon, and keep up the great work.
Great to talk to you, my friend.
When it comes to insurance, you need a neighbor, a partner, and friend. You need Choppa Insurance Agency. They're located right on Reservoir Avenue in Cranston. Call today, free consultation, 401-900-INSU, 401-900-4678, Choppa Insurance, SIA. Steven, very experienced, whether it's auto, home, renters, business insurance, flood, recreational, umbrella, any other protection for your assets, Rhode Island and Massachusetts, Choppa Insurance Agency, your agency of choice. Call today, set up a meeting. They're so knowledgeable, can have everything under one roof. Call Shoppa Insurance today, 401-900-INSU or 401-900-4678. Look for them on Facebook, again, located Reservoir Avenue in Cranston. Shoppa Insurance Agency, your neighbor, your partner, your friend. One-stop insurance solutions. It's My Health, 1099 Menden Road in Cumberland, diagonally across from Davenport Restaurant. Stop in and see Marie, that historic white church. Shop local, inside, all quality products, vitamins, herbal remedies, trusted companies. They understand quality, integrity. It's My Health. It's all about your health. Local products, ICE, honey, maple syrup, beef fresh gum. You know, they carry over 250 bulk herbs, teas, and spices that can be purchased by the ounce, plus box herbs and teas, hemp and CBD products, and much more natural skincare products. Stop in and see Marie at It's My Health, 1099 Menden Road in Cumberland. It's all about health for you, for your family. There's vitamins for children, all different types of teas, all different types of spices. Boy, what a difference it'll make. Shop local. Stop it and see the Queen of Health. It's Marie. And It's My Health, 1099 Menden Road in Cumberland, diagonally across from Davenport Restaurant, right in that historic white church. It's all about health. It's all about your health at It's My Health. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. Controversy. Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey, as she announced she's converting Roxbury Recreation Center, new shelter for illegals. And I don't blame the people for being upset about it. Let's listen.
Because I'm committed to this. Little kids need to be able to breathe clean air. They need to be able to access swimming pools. They need to have lifeguards there who are going to teach them how to swim. And they need to have activities. I don't know what we're going to do for a couple, 3 months. I'll call universities. I'll call other places.
The governor went on to say she is also looking at other locations, but has not said exactly where.
No, she sent them to Roxbury. Make no mistake about it. She sent them to Roxbury. As other people are saying, that, you know, she didn't send them to Wellesley or anything like that. Let's listen to
the
full piece. Here it is.
Inside the new temporary shelter, which will be a safe space for hundreds of families over the next few months. The Malnia Cass Rec Center.
A recreational center in Roxbury, now a temporary safety net site with beds, play areas, and other necessities for incoming migrant families that the governor and community leaders toured today.
We're here today because we really don't have a choice.
State and city leaders say they've all been moved by the plight of families, many now camping out at Logan Airport with no place to go, and a state shelter system stretched to the limit.
When children are asking, Mommy, where are we going tonight? Where are we going to sleep? It's a human crisis.
Shame on Healy!
But the plan has received mixed reviews in the community, since the recreation center is also a vital resource for youth and adult programs.
We sympathize with them. We as a people in our community, we love. But sometimes we love so much that we spite our own selves.
Alternating toe touches.
Tony DeRocca, with Boston United Track and Cross Country, coaches young athletes in a free weekly program here, and now doesn't know where they'll go with a meet set for Sunday.
We have kids who also are impacted negatively, and our program is one that very few stable times of their life.
I've been going here for like 2 years now, and like it's been like a second home to me.
But the decision to make it a temporary home until May 31st for migrant families is called humanitarian, but also difficult by some. And Boston Mayor Michelle Wu acknowledged that today.
This is not the first time that this community has been asked to sacrifice over and over again. And so we'll continue to work with the state and ensure that all options are on the table.
Now, the governor says she hopes the community will be helped, not burdened by the plan, saying local vendors will be used to provide food and other necessities here, and funding will be provided for long-awaited upgrades to the Melnia Cass Recreational Center once the temporary shelter is closed.
You know, think about this. They're now, and it's been happening, but knocking out regular citizens to put them there. How is that fair? And she can cry all she wants. That is absolutely ridiculous. Hey, and by the way, folks, you watch. This is going to spread. Governor McKee, he is absolutely daring them to start to put some, to bring illegal. I mean, he's not, you know, not showing up on a bus, definitely arriving here. But can you get any closer than Roxbury to Providence? That's a short ride, under an hour. But this is on Democrat policies. This is absolutely about with what's going on at the border and then allowing it to then go into other cities, whether it's New York or Chicago or in this case in the Boston area. So, and you continue, if you run a sanctuary state, then you're open to it. You run a sanctuary city, then you're vulnerable to it. But this begins and ends with the policies at the border. And as long as you have governors like Governor Healey and Governor McKee and Governor Newsom and the mayor of New York City and the governor of Illinois, then, you know, why should it just be a problem for Texas? Why should it just be a problem for Arizona? Other states are stepping up. So, but to be knocking out American citizens for these people who have no business being here, totally wrong. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. All your oil needs, make it Henry Oil. Call Henry Oil today, 401-521-0200. Reliable, affordable fuel oil delivery. Call Henry Oil today. Fuel oil, diesel, gasoline delivery. It's Henry Oil, residential, commercial fuel oil delivery since 1947. They also have budget plans, service contracts, lock and cap pricing. You can depend on Henry Oil. Call them today, 401-521-0200. Serving most of Rhode Island and southeastern Mass. We got a long way to go with winter. Make sure that tank is filled. Call Henry Oil today, 401-521-0200. Henry Oil, a local family-run business since 1947 that you can depend on. For all your oil needs, call Henry Oil today, 401-521-0200. Lodge Pub and Eatery, 40 Breakneck Hill Road in Lincoln. Lunch, dinner, drinks in the lounge, especially this time of year. So much going on. They always have a nice crowd right there. Full bar, large dining area right there in the lounge. Easy to get to, whether it's lunch or dinner. A great meal is waiting for you at the Lodge Pub and Eatery. Think of this, since 1994. That's right, celebrating the big anniversary this year. I'll see you at the Lodge Pub and Eatery, 40 Breakneck Hill Road in Lincoln. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. Folks, I always tout our website just because it has exclusive stories and video. It has links to on-the-scene live stream. Remember, there's no vowel I. It's DePetro.com, DePetro.com. You can also reach me that way if you'd like to get in touch with me. DePetro.com. Log on, and then links to Facebook and YouTube, everything we have. It's all waiting for you right there at the website.